go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go. We are off and running this 24th day of November 2017. The day after Thanksgiving 2017. My sister's birthday as well. Happy 71st, sis. She doesn't listen, but still, it's the thought that counts, right?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Friday on the front porch. It's the end of the week. Time for the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that with which we close out the week. A sort of potpourri of thoughts and issues, depending on what folks want to bring to the table. The extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. And, well, you're welcome to participate, if you like. It's easy. All you got to do is go on Skype and have a Skype account. And gosh, I'd love to hear some new voices on Friday on the front porch. I know we all would. Not that there's anything wrong with the old voices, but it's nice when we've got 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 people, and it's a real rousing, rollicking festival. Yes. If you want to participate, just go on Skype and use the search function to search Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, one word, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail and tell you which quadrant of the sky to look in as he flashes the Bob signal off the clouds. Yes, so it is, and I hope everyone enjoyed, those who listened live and those who looked in their notifications and went, son of a gun, there was a program Wednesday night. I hope everyone enjoyed the special Thanksgiving Eve bonus program Wednesday. I know I did. Chucks, I always enjoy telling that story. I had a lovely note. Let me back up here. It'll only take me a second. Working. Oh, there it is. I had a lovely note from Terry yesterday. From the wilds of Amherst, where only the H is silent, and some of us still heat with wood. We're home cooking and listening to great bluegrass from your beautiful, historic, all-American neck of the woods. Good old, by God, West Virginia. Hope you're having a great day, Bob. And remember to leave some banana pudding for the grandbabies. Well, see, that's just to encourage, you know, we make that to encourage the grandbabies to become deacons. It's not much different from prayer meeting Wednesday, Terry. But, no, they're yes. And, you know what? I behaved myself. I didn't go wild. And, you know, we're back home today, and we brought some Thanksgiving with us home. And it tastes better the second day. I'm sorry. It just does. Maybe that's some sort of eldritch grandmother wisdom or something. But they knew. They had to know it tasted better the second day. Oh, so good. And special thanks. Special thanks go out to Rich in New Jersey. Had it not been for Rich, I would not have reached for those bundles of fresh turnip greens. And we wouldn't have had probably the best pot of greens I've made in eons. And they were a hit. Now, it may come as a surprise to some, but not to me in the modern world. Our grandkids had never had greens. You know, I guess it's just one of those things you don't think about. I mean, you can buy them in a can and they're, you know, they're okay. Oh, but when you make them fresh and they've still got a little bit of chew to them and you braise them first in the... Oh, I know, I'm going to get email. But when you braise them in the bacon grease first and then you cook them down low and slow and you let the pot liquor concentrate. Oh, and you sop the cornbread in the pot liquor. I was a cornbread making fool yesterday. All I was trying to do was make cornbread to put in the dressing. And every time I turned around, it was usually one of my daughters. Why are you eating the cornbread? Both you eat the cornbread? Okay, fire the oven back up. But the grandbabies had never had greens before. And I mean, they went at the greens with a will. I hollered for the youngest because he's 7, and he's experimental, and he ain't afraid of nothing. And I said, "Come here, we're gonna try greens." "Greens? Yes, greens." "Well, greens. Delicious, that's what." And so made sure that they weren't blazing hot out of the boiling pot liquor and everything, but he got a bite of them and he proceeded to chew. And there was that, you know, because it was something new, so there was that curious, not too sure if I can trust my opa face. And then it was like sunlight on a clear morning as his face just erupted into a big smile. And before he had fully swallowed, and he knows better than to talk with his mouth full, but he looked at me and said, "Oh, Pa, I like greens. I love greens." And so that meant that his brother had to come. "What you got?" "Greens." And so we went, my grandchildren love greens. Of course, their mother loves them, too. So does their grandmother. And, well, it was a simple menu. But it was really, really well appreciated. And the dressing and... I didn't get to smoke the turkey. It just... No. But I got it there. I got it done. It was moist. It was tender. It was wonderful. Had a little bouquet garni in there, as well as some mirepoix, you know, some potatoes and onions and celery and carrots. And that was just to flavor the broth. Made the giblet gravy from hell. Started with a saucepan with just the turkey neck and the liver and the heart and the gizzard in it, and just let it boil and cook and cook and cook and cook and cook, low, slow, till the liquid in it was reduced to near nothing. Not near nothing. You know, probably a good cup, but it was like super, super reduced. And that became the basis of the turkey giblet gravy. Oh. Yeah, there was enough mashed potatoes to have sculpted a Matterhorn, and it was all just wonderful, and we had a grand time. And I know, Ron, I know, but it's a modern world, and they're even in rural West Virginia, but no. Ron in Raleigh says, "Greens? What kind of young heathens are you raising? No greens by the age of 7? Damaged for life. P.S. Hard to light a turkey." There we go. Probably the last turkey smoking joke of the year, but it's always a good one. That's how the lifeways slip away. You know, I could have gone with a mix, but I just like turnip greens better than anything else. There are people out there who prefer collards and people who like mustard and people who like kale. I am decidedly, and this is going to really, really put me in bad with the hipsters, I ain't into kale. I'm just not. I mean, I'll eat it as a green, but it's the... it's got the least flavor. You know, turnips, you get that sort of spiciness of a turnip. Mustard greens, God knows, and collards are just a thing of their own. I thought about doing collards, but they take longer than the turnip greens do. But oh, it was all just so good. So I hope y'all had every bit as good a day. And like I said, thanks to Rich in New Jersey for reminding me that I needed greens on the menu. Mm-hmm. The banana pudding, oh my God. It was, yes, it went very, very well. And by way of thanks, because I was about to get ahead of myself, by way of thanks, I need to thank Paul. Note from Paul this evening: hope yesterday's get-together went well. The banana biscuit caramel marshmallow dish sounds, well, how about wrapping it in bacon? Ooh, there's a thought. Yeah. But yeah. Thank you, Paul. And just where are we on fundraising as we come into the end of the week? We are at $295. And thanks very kindly to our subscribers. And thanks also to Renee. Thank you, Renee. Renee helped knock it down. Renee in D.C. And thanks to our subscribers, Pam in Washington. And thanks also to Jason in California. We didn't completely wipe it out, but we got very close to wiping out the deficit. Thank you to Stacy in PA. Thank you very kindly, Stacy. Thank you to our old friend Philip in Maryland. And thanks to Joyce in Washington. And to Brenda in Washington as well. Thank you all very, very kindly for being part of the subscription team that makes the difference between success and failure quite often. We got like $293, which is even worse than dealing with a five. But yes, $293 to go. And hopefully we'll knock that down in the next, between now and 8 o'clock. Program note, I'm still waiting to find out if I'm filling in for Malloy this evening or not. I'm looking at the connection, and there's nothing there, and I haven't heard from them. So Malloy may be a best of tonight, and nobody, I just don't know. But such as the case may be, we'll go until 8 p.m., and then I'll see if they get us connected all the way through to Progressive Voices. So, and by the way, you know, as ever, we love new subscribers and love to give credit where credit is due every evening. If it's the 24th of the month, if you decide to be a Patreon subscriber and jump in that way, it won't come out till the first of the month, and that way you'll know the first of the month. You can just jot that down, whatever. Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, or just do it through the Horn site, headonradionetwork.com/contribute, and click that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. If you don't want to do that, and that's fine, and you just want to help out this evening, that's great, because it would be wonderful to end the week so that all we've got is 4 days of finishing off the month of November, and then, you know, start it again. Because, it gets a little. Sometimes it gets a little tense down this way because we're working toward the all the challenges at the end of the month. The Nudge the Norsky challenge, the Lick the Lithuanian challenge, and the Cash the Check challenge. So that's where we stand on all of that. We're $293 from finishing the evening. Ron in Raleigh says, I'm no hipster. I'm drawing Social Security. I've been a kale person since I was your grandchildren's age. I made a roast pork loin with onions, apples, cinnamon, and honey. Also sprigs of fresh thyme. Ooh, that's mighty fine. Mighty fine. That would be a mighty fine table to sit down to. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like kale doesn't bring the flavor to the party that mustard and collards and turnip greens do. Call me crazy, but it's not like I push away from the table if somebody puts kale in front of me. I dive into them with a will. I love my greens. Midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgia Stan says, "Hey Gordo, why didn't you tell me that? Well, that's just cold. Gordo, you stink. I think that's what it means. Why didn't you tell me you was broadcasting Wednesday?" Cletus said her feelings are hurt. Well, I didn't tell anybody. I just hotted up the mic and went. It was a game time decision. And when you got it, you just go. Yeah. So, I mean, that's not much of an answer, but that's the answer. Meanwhile, Lee in New York City reminds us, Mike said that you'll be filling in for him tonight. Hope the technology works. Me too. I just don't see any technology happening. So, it remains to be seen. I've messaged the appropriate people. And speaking of Lee in New York City, I've got something to share with you here that is absolutely wonderful. And thanks to Lee for choosing to share it, you know, via the horn. Lee said, I had this in my mind, subject line, looking back at a year of Trump. I had this in my mind. I wrote Trumpish tweets that I credit to my secret access to a Trumpeter account. Below are my Thanksgiving edition. Enjoy or not, wishing the best to you and yours, and the best to you, Lee. So here's the Thanksgiving the Thanksgiving gratitude list of Donald J. Trump. Because everyone is expressing what they're thankful for, I'm taking this Thanksgiving time to look back at all the things I have to be thankful for and that America has to thank me for. I'm grateful for no one realizing how bad I am at numbers. I'm grateful for Twitter increasing its tweet capacity. I do not have to be interrupted by hitting send so often. It's hard picking up where I left off. What is the new limit? 10 seconds of typing? It's about right. So glad all those illegal voters in 2016 decided to vote only where they were safely hidden by other Democrats. It let me win the Electoral College. I'm so smart. I won at college. So glad I avoided showing my tax returns. I do not remember if the numbers were big or small, but they were probably not the numbers I remember. My inauguration crowd was the largest in history. Even those crooked Hillary supporters were there. They were in camouflage clothes. It made them hard to see. That is why people think they see a small crowd. No room left for my supporters. Not fair. Obama was golfing all the time. I barely golf at all. That is because Mar-a-Lago and that place I have in New Jersey don't count. You can't be vacationing at a place you own. You have to check the books. I hate books. So many words and numbers. Maybe I should ban books. I worked hard at getting everyone great affordable health care, but Congress could not deliver. My plan included giving every patient a lollipop and a Band-Aid with a comics character. The wall will be built, it will be beautiful, and Mexico will pay for it. My plan is to meet the Mexican president at the UN cafeteria. I will have the waiter add the cost of the wall to the bill. Then I sneak away, leaving Enrique Peña Nieto to pay the bill. It's foolproof. The stock market goes up and unemployment's going down. I started that trend without any help and kicked it off years before getting elected. That is how tremendous my successes are. Got out of the TPP. Do not say PP quickly. The Trans-Pacific Partnership was a lousy deal. I did not negotiate it. Those nations cannot negotiate a deal without the U.S. Getting us out of the Paris Climate Accord. It's all fake news from China. The opposition is small and weak. It is only the other nations on earth. China, not Gina. I can't read my own writing. It's all fake news from China. The opposition is small and weak. It's only the other nations on earth. But they are not great. Only America is great. I solved the war in Syria. After I launched the missiles at the airport, the fake news never reported about Syria again. See how easy fixing that problem was? In Saudi Arabia, I danced with a sword. My parents used to keep sharp things away from me. They were wrong. My little fingers are fine. I'm typing this, aren't I? Iran is the next deal to replace with something great. You need a deal maker like me to make great deals. Why does no one else get that? Well, they're not as smart as me. I'm the smartest, and I have the best words. My supporters still love me. 91% said they would still vote for me. Every Republican loves me. A few are just embarrassed to say it publicly. I filled the Supreme Court, something Kenyan-born Obama could not do. Cannot remember his name, Neil or some such name. But he will be great for corporations, and that means he'll be great for America, MAGA. Taxes are going down. The average American will win because they will benefit from corporations' rates being slashed and ending the estate tax and the alternate minimum tax. These taxes prevent wealthy people and companies from sharing their wealth. You're welcome. While you are, of course. Other tax news, I've cut spending. No more wasted spending on fully staffing departments. CHIP is not funded because we have to make America great again. No time for children. We're looking to stop funding for failed Obamacare. Helped Americans with disaster relief, Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico. Did you see me with the paper towels? Now that island is in the middle of the ocean, can dry off. I get an A+. Thankful for Bob Mueller, who has not found any collusion or conspiracy with Russia. Putin is such a great host, and the women who visited me in the hotel showered praise on me. At least that's what they called it. It's praise, Donald, praise. Little Rocket Man gave me the chance to show how impressive the U.S. military is. He also let me play Elton John in my head. I think it's going to be a long, long time before NK tries anything. Losing a family member in Niger is horrible. But that is small compared to a personal call from the president who forgets when you speak to the president. That's why I know the representative did not remember my words. I was not talking to her. I got to sign so many executive orders. We're getting rid of bad regulations so fast. Now you can get a gun even if you have a mental health problem. Who would oppose that? Speaking of opposing, why do the courts want to block bans against those bad immigrants from coming to the U.S. legally? Stop legal immigration? Sad. These court decisions make me rewrite my very good rules to help American. It is like teachers making me rewrite those essays. They were perfect the first time. Thinking of school, why does the fake news make Gold Star families seem so important? In school, I got plenty of Gold Stars. I just took them from the teacher's desk when she wasn't looking. Even the people who don't like me helped me. The NFL players gave me a chance to embrace the flag. The cloth is so comfortable, believe me, and my supporters love it. And that guy with the nuclear football is always nearby. I don't like football anymore. Maybe we can change it to a nuclear golf ball. That way, if I shout, four, look out, I am teed off. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Lee in New York. I'm teed off. There's a lot of gold in that there email. Thank you to our buddy Jug of Punch getting us started. Have a remaining $1 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 3 equals 288. So that's what we've got, and I'm even getting help with the ciphering now. $288 to go. One at 288, two at 144. Oh dear. Four at 72, 4 at 72, 8 at 36, yeah, 16 at, oh dear, wait a minute, 18. Ooh, sorry, I'll be better. You still called me Gordo, Steve. Gordo does not stink. It's the couch he sits on, LOL. I think that's a distinction without a difference. But as we all sort of recuperate from the holiday feast, and well, we're still recuperating from the aftermath. Well, you might need a little help. Yes. And that's why I'm proud to tell you this evening about Laconic Lentils from Horn Labs. That's right, Laconic Lentils from Horn Labs. Guaranteed vegan, gluten-free, free-range, cruelty-free, open-sourced, and everything else that we think is wonderful. That's right. Laconic Lentils from the peripatetic scientists at Horn Labs. Laconic Lentils will perk you up when perking is exactly what you needed. Get not twerking, damn it. Perking. They will perk you up, not twerk you up. Quit that. You know, I've never cared much for lentils. And that's why it's only through the goodness of Laconic Lentils from Horn Labs that I am able to, get my daily reassurance of lentil goodness, lentil nutrition each and every day. And, of course, if you act now and you order a 3-month supply, there's lots of lentils out there, but it's the processes, mind you, that make the difference. If you order a 3-month supply of Laconic Lentils right now, we will send you alongside that a bundle of little useless test strips that you can use to make sure that Laconic Lentils are every bit as meaningless and worthless as we tell you they are here. Mm-hmm. Laconic Lentils only from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes. Post no bills. Use no hooks. FOB. COD. CIA. Laconic Lentils only from Horn Labs. Asa of Little Faith says, but Cardinal Kincaid, do Laconic Lentils help a brother deacon maintain a chub for more than 4 hours? These are the questions I ask myself. And we're glad that most of the time, Brother Deacon Asa, you ask them of yourself and not of the Horn Family Community Congregation. But, well, all we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it. Of course Laconic Lentils will help you in that way. If that's the help you need, if that's what you believe Laconic Lentils will do for you, then Laconic Lentils are exactly what you need. Mm-hmm. So there we go. They are free-range Laconic Lentils as well. Did I not? Yes, cruelty-free, cage-free, and free-range Laconic Lentils. Only from Horn Labs. Now, it's about 29 minutes past the hour, and, you know, the world doesn't stop just because it's Thanksgiving. But I think it's safe to say I can mention this now that the holiday has passed, and perhaps all the little lurking right-wing weirdos who lurk here because they know they're not allowed on the program ever. I think I can mention this. I wonder if Southerners, this is one of those history moments, I wonder if Southerners would be so eager to celebrate Thanksgiving if they knew its true origins. Yes, 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 the Pilgrims and, right, John Winthrop and the proclamation after having slaughtered some Pequot up in what has become now Connecticut. But as far as a formal declaration of the Thanksgiving holiday, long before there were miserable, long before it had been miserably co-opted into capitalism, Abraham Lincoln proclaimed the Thanksgiving holiday. And he did so on the third day of October, 1863. The Union had spent the last couple of years fighting with its, with one hand tied behind its back. And the generalship was not great, and there were a lot of people who were put in charge of the Union Army who really should never have been in charge of organizing so much as a parade. But something had happened in July of 1863. Some things had happened in July of 1863. Old Marse Bobby Lee got all froggy and decided he was going to invade the North. And so he marched his army up into Pennsylvania and got his treasonous ass handed to him at Gettysburg. Meanwhile, down along the banks of the Tennessee River, the siege of Vicksburg had been underway for some time. And those Confederates there were down to eating boiled shoe leather and the occasional stray rat when they finally ran up their final Confederate flag there over the town. You know, the one that's just solid white, we surrender. And they did so on July the 4th, 1863. And so steeped were they in their hatred of the North that it would be decades, maybe near a century, before the 4th of July would ever be recognized as anything but a day of mourning in Vicksburg, Mississippi. But it was obvious to Lincoln that the tide was turning, and he therefore issued a proclamation. He said, "The year that is drawing towards its close has been filled with the blessings of fruitful fields and healthful skies." Healthful skies. Yeah, try saying that around a pipeline compressor station or a mountaintop removal site. Oh, well. "To these bounties, which are so constant..." Wait, do I need to be doing my Abraham Lincoln voice here? Let's see. "The year that is drawing towards its close has been filled with the blessings of fruitful fields and healthful skies. To these bounties which are so constantly enjoyed that we are prone to forget the source from which they come, others have been added, which are of so extraordinary a nature that they cannot fail to penetrate and soften even the heart which is habitually insensible to the ever-watchful providence of Almighty God." In the midst of a civil war of unequaled magnitude and severity, which has sometimes seemed to foreign states to invite and to provoke their aggression, peace has been preserved with all nations, order has been maintained, The laws have been respected and obeyed, and harmony has prevailed everywhere except in the theater of military conflict, while that theater has been greatly contracted by the advancing armies and navies of the Union. Needful of diversions of wealth and of strength from the fields of peaceful industry to the national defense, have not arrested the plow, the shuttle, or the ship. The axe had enlarged the borders of our settlements and the mines, as well as of iron and coal, as of the previous precious metals, have yielded even more abundantly than heretofore. Population has steadily increased, notwithstanding the waste that has been made in the camp, the siege, and the battlefield, and the country, rejoicing in the consciousness of augmented strength and vigor, is permitted to expect continuance of years with large increase of freedom. No human counsel hath devised, nor hath any mortal hand worked out, these great things. They are the gracious gifts of the Most High God, who, while dealing with us in anger for our sins, hath nevertheless remembered mercy. It has seemed to me fit and proper that they should be solemnly, reverently, and gratefully acknowledged, as with one heart and voice, by the whole American people. I do therefore invite my fellow citizens in every part of the United States, and also those who are at sea and those who are sojourning in foreign lands, to set apart and observe a day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent Father who dwelleth in the heavens. And I recommend to them that while offering up the ascriptions justly due to him for such singular deliverances and blessings, they do also with humble penitence for our national perverseness and disobedience commend to his tender care all those who have become widows, orphans, mourners, or sufferers in the lamentable civil strife in which we are unavoidably engaged, and fervently implore the interposition of the Almighty Hand to heal the wounds of the nation and to restore it as soon as may be consistent with the divine purposes to the full enjoyment of peace, harmony, tranquility, and union. How about that? Now, Lincoln did not write that himself. We're pretty well certain that I believe it was William H. Seward who wrote that for him. That's why all the divine providence and stuff is in there. Lincoln was not a big believer. Not really. But what's interesting is that it is a reflection of his time. And you notice that the invitation is to his fellow citizens in every part of the United States, and people at sea, and those in foreign lands, that they mark the Thanksgiving Day. Curiously, that does not include the traders south of the Mason-Dixie line. Interesting that there's a mention of coal there, because only a couple of months before, 17 days after the release of this proclamation, 17 days after the release of this proclamation, the state of West Virginia would have been a state for precisely 4 months. Lincoln was a pragmatist. And what he's saying there, I mean, you heard me read it in the Lincoln voice and everything, but that's a long-winded sort of roundabout way of sticking it to the South one more time. Yeah, God's punishing us and everything, but he's our God, not yours. And also, without saying it, he says the full. Without mentioning slavery, he does say the full enjoyment of peace, harmony, tranquility, and union. Well, you can't fully enjoy it if the people, if there are a people set aside, who are not free. And so, since we don't have to worry about any butthurt sons of the Confederacy or nothing around here, we can safely say that the first Thanksgiving proclamation issued by Abraham Lincoln was a thumb in the eye to the South. we're going to win now. We know we're going to win. And a whole lot of people are going to be free as a result of our victory. And so it's worthwhile to note, because even this holiday, like anything else in the United States of America, it's conflicted. And there is bitter with the sweet. And so with the conflict in this particular instance being the fact that the first Thanksgiving, courtesy of Winthrop in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, being declared because they had just killed a whole lot of natives from whom they were stealing the land, and the fact that to this day people gather at Plymouth in Massachusetts who are of indigenous stock to note not what is Thanksgiving Day, but a day of mourning. With all of that in mind, it is worth noting that the actual holiday comes into being for one reason. And that reason is the struggle to free enslaved people from their barbaric masters. And that, damned well, 154 years later, was worth celebrating. I believe it. Now, like I said, we're going to have a foreshortened program this evening. And so, consequently, Sparky, if you're up for it, we'll go ahead and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And hopefully folks will wander in as time continues to pass. And as a result, we'll see what people want to, you know, what people want to converse about. And again, if you want to join in the Friday on the Front Porch conversation, well, go to Skype, search for Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, and send him a friend request. Or a contact request, I should say. It's not a friend request on Skype. It's a contact request. And we will see where the conversation takes us. Let's see. As a consequence, we'll take our break in the next couple of minutes. And One other aspect of Thanksgiving. Wasn't it 1863 when Lincoln signed off on the execution of a number of Sioux people in Minnesota? A mass hanging. Yeah, there's a reason it's a day of mourning. And there's a reason that our remembrance must be of more than the usual stuff. Okay, then. We'll take a break and see what happens with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. This is listener-supported conversation radio with $288 in fundraising to go to finish the week. And we'll cross our fingers and see how that plays out. I'm Bob Kincaid. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Find the Cost of Freedom. Sorry, that's driving me crazy. I don't know why the Skype line's ringing through on the playback channel. Yeah, you're right. Randy in PA says Skype happens. Yes, it does. And let's see what's going on. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. Didn't have a really big day yesterday. You know what?
Did you do a tri-tip or anything?
No. Just the turkey breast and some potatoes and some gravy.
Sounds tasty to me. Yeah, I mean, we kept the menu fairly simple, too. It's possible to go way, 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 way overboard. And we didn't. It was just it's just nice. And it's fun being around the little ones.
Yeah, well, I got a visitor right now. My minion's in the rock shop cleaning up my neighbor from across the street.
Ah, you have a... Yeah, yes, you do. You have a minion now.
And the other... for his house out of scrap wood that I'd found from my other neighbor last year. And... I did that on Wednesday. Then finished that up and come in here, and then I found out that you were seeing somebody post something on the Horn Facebook page.
Yeah, like I said to Steve, that was just a last minute, kind of thing. And I thought it would be just a nice thing to do for folks since a lot of people aren't, weren't live.
And then we binged watch some Netflix. A series about Godless.
I'm sorry, I lost that last part.
We did some Netflix.
Yeah.
That series I told you about. Godless.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we watched that over Tuesday and Wednesday. Well, just finished it. No, we finished it yesterday. But it's got, I had his name for.
So is it, I mean, is it fiction?
Jeff Daniels.
Is it fiction or is it documentary style or what?
Well, it's kind of a fictional thing, but it has historical implications to it. I don't want to ruin it.
No, don't. you said you binge watched it. How many episodes?
It's only 7 episodes.
Oh, okay. So that's just a small binge.
But yeah, well, there is some of them are over an hour long. I think the final episode is over an hour long.
Okay.
But had Jeff Daniels and Sam Waterston's in it. Jeff Daniels plays the bad guy, I can say that much. And he's a damn good bad guy.
Oh, I can well imagine, yeah.
And there's a lot of horse riding and everything in it. But if you like westerns, a lot of bang bang shoot 'em up too.
Oh, cool!
And then we started watching a Marvel thing, The Punisher, last night. Don't know if it's going to be any good. It's kind of getting interesting, but it starts out slow. But other than that, I just once in a while watching politics things or reading the Facebook feed. Seen something the other day, and somebody said Donnie didn't know that we had it. Donnie was saying that we have invisible jets.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, we've got invisible fighter planes. The thing is, though, if we've got invisible fighter planes, how can he know? I mean, has the military gotten to the point, Sparky, do you think, that they're just punking Trump? Oh, no, Mr. President. We've got invisible aircraft. No, they'll never see them. I mean, you can be flying. Because I read the quote. Oh, yeah, you can be flying right beside them and never see them. That's somebody who's just screwing with somebody. Really? We've got those? That is so cool. I mean, that's the only logical explanation for it, isn't it?
Yeah, somebody's punking him.
Because they know that he can't resist running out and yapping about it. Yeah, little rocket man, better watch out. We've got invisible aircraft. There are all kinds of ramifications here. If the aircraft is invisible, does that mean it just looks like there's a guy sitting in the middle of the clouds zipping along?
Yeah. The whole thing in visibility is the radar size what it looks like
on
radar.
It's radar shadow or whatever you call it. Yeah, I get, yeah. I mean, that's just stealth technology, and never mind the fact that, you know, for anybody with a half a brain, the letter and numbers F-35, the only thing in the world that means to most people is it's a barely flying boondoggle that nobody particularly wanted, but the Lockheed Martin insisted on us having. And they
probably got assembly plants all over the country.
There is some element of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. I think I read it somewhere. Some element of it is manufactured in every single congressional district. So that even cuts down on the amount of bribery they have to write into the contract.
Yeah.
But you know, it's been plagued with problems, like the part where if a pilot had to eject, it was going to decapitate him when he ejected. Well, you know, that really sort of takes all the purpose out of the ejection mechanism, doesn't it? You know, saving the pilot's life and everything. you know, this, with the application.
I've never looked into the F-35 canopy, but most of the other canopies have explosive bolts on them, and it blows the canopy off.
Right, but somewhere along the way, they had a problem. They had a little decapitation problem. I don't think they actually decapitated a pilot to find it out, but they did. Some clever engineer noticed it somewhere along the way, and it's been one problem after another. The cost overruns are ridiculous. It costs the equivalent of the gross national product of some countries just to buy one. Somehow or another, we managed to hoodoo our friends in Australia into buying a few of them.
And Canada.
I think we got the Canadians to buy some too. I mean, you'd think they'd know better. You know, they'd see us when we were, but no. It's a mess, and what's more, it's invisible. Oh, see, this is a Jedi mind trick, Sparky. It's all becoming clear to me now. At any point in time, Kim Jong Golf Pants can look into the skies over North Korea and never know if there's a whole bunch of invisible United States fighter aircraft over him. I mean, there could be one just hovering scant yards away with its evaporator death ray pointed right at him, and that'll make you crazy after a little while.
Evaporator death ray, really, Bob?
Absolutely. If you've got an invisible airplane, it's got to have an evaporator death ray. I mean, it's in the sky. Otherwise, I mean, if this was a Navy ship, it'd have sharks with freaking laser beams. See how it works?
Well, the Navy's going to have the laser cannons.
Yeah, but they're not going to have sharks.
No. But they train dolphins. They couldn't train a shark. But they train dolphins to do things.
But that doesn't mean that there's not some enterprising young capitalist out there who wants to try to do it for a couple of billion dollars. Evaporator death rays on the invisible airplane. I wouldn't mess with us. Not if, no. I mean, that's a clear signal to the Russians that, you know, you don't want to screw with us.
Yeah, but they know all about our technology.
Yeah, but they don't know about the invisible planes and the invisible bombs. Then again, I don't know. Maybe Michael Flynn sold them the technology and we're all covered up in invisible Russian airplanes with invisible evaporator death rays and invisible bombs. You know, it's kind of hard to have an arms race when all the arms are invisible, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
But you get the idea that they really, you know, we're not a year in yet. And people are desperately trying to figure out ways to, A, not go down with his sinking ship, and B, if you absolutely positively no two ways about it, have to deal with him, not deal with him. Did you see this story about the meeting that Delaware Senator Tom Carper had with Gary Cohn, the director of legislative, he's the chief economic advisor, and the director of legislative affairs, Mark Short.
No, I think you're going to tell me.
I damn sure am. They were all in this meeting, and they're talking about the budget, and they're talking about, you know, how they can, you know, pass the tax reform thingy that's a giant howling, barking at the moon ripoff. And lo and behold, the damn phone rings. Gary Cohn's phone rings. And guess who? That's right, it's dipshit Donnie. And Gary Cohn is like, I mean, you've seen how people behave when they get a phone call from somebody they want to talk to. They'll take the phone away from their ear, they'll point at it, and they'll kind of look at the other people in the group and go, Well, that's when Tom Carper said, "Hey, Gare, just tell him, Mr. President, you're brilliant, but we're losing contact, and I think we're going to lose you now, so goodbye." And Gary Cohn actually did that. "Oh, Mr. President, those are some really brilliant ideas, but we've got a terrible connection here. I don't know what's wrong. So you know, before I lose you, goodbye," click. And this story has to have gotten back to Trump. Carper told the story to CNN. And then, what kind of a position does that leave Gary Cohn in? He, in turn, has to look at Trump when Trump finds out. And goes, "Oh, no, that's not true, Mr. President. No, I love talking to you, Mr. President. I would never do something like that to you. Yes, you're a natural-born genius, shit. All right? Hey, I noticed that John in Central PA has jumped into the conversation. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Pretty good. About you?
I'm good. I wanted to clarify something that I said last week. It was in about the media, how I made a pretty stupid comment. I said that if I was in a position of power, you would think that I was a totalitarian because I would crack down on the media. Well, let me clarify what I said, because I listened to the podcast the next day and I thought, wow, yeah, that didn't sound very good, and that's not really kind of what I was really meant. So what I really meant was this. Okay, the media's role in the rise of Donald Trump is a huge scandal. I mean, huge scandal.
You mean the degree to which they created him?
Yes, it's criminal. It's actually criminal. In my opinion, they all but committed treason because they put profits before the country. And you know how back in 2008, how us progressives wanted to see some of the bankers that helped create that crisis?
Take the perp walk?
Well, I want the same thing for some of the people in media. And I'm not talking about like anchors and people like that, or even some print journalists, but they have been doing such an abortive job on this. Just like the other day when I guess it was reported that I asked Trump about Roy Moore, and he went on to say that Doug Jones is bad on crime. I mean, did any of these bastards, these stupid sons of bitches in the media, say, "No, Mr. President, as a matter of fact," and then tell him? I mean, there is no journalism when it comes to the press corps, the White House press corps. There is no such thing as journalism anymore, and that's scary. They're abusing the First Amendment in grotesque ways. And, you know, like, it's so bad that it makes me so mad. The other day, I'm reading a BuzzFeed article about the John Conyers situation. And in the BuzzFeed article, it refers to John Conyers not as Representative Conyers, but as the Democrat. So the line said in it, and this is, I'm pretty much quoting, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but
it was like a tertiary reference. First, they called him Representative John Conyers of Michigan. Then they called him Mr. Conyers, and then they called him the Democrat. Right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it said, and this is what was so made it seem even so much more damning. It said the young woman, another woman's accusing the Democrat, and I'm thinking, come on, BuzzFeed, come on.
Aren't they the ones who broke the story in the first place?
Yes, and they're the ones who collaborated with the right wing fascist to break the story. Now,
right,
I'm glad that broke the story. I'm sorry, but I am glad, because these people need to be washed out of the Democratic Party of all parties.
But hold on, John. I'm only going to say this. They didn't break the story. they broke a fragment of the story.
Okay.
They didn't have the whole story. The hit piece that was put together by Mike Chernovic, whatever, was a matter of you know, reporting of secondary and tertiary sources on something that happened, but no one knows exactly what happened. You know, right. For instance, the Harvey Weinstein story, when the New York Times published it, they had sat on that thing for months trying to verify sources, getting people to go on the record. Well, no such luck here. So you get you get a salacious pile of details and no actual reporting on what really happened. You know, the allegation was that a sexual harassment suit was paid off to the tune of what was the official number? $27,111 or something like that.
Yeah, they said that was public money too, which is bad.
Well,
I don't like that.
But hold on. Since when do you settle a sexual harassment suit for $27,000?
Hopefully never.
Well, I mean, do you? And I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm not saying it did. I don't know. That's the problem here. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Because BuzzFeed published about a half a story.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to believe whatever these women are saying that he's dead. I mean, like I said last week, and I'm going to stand firm on this. We really can't afford not to believe them. But
I am not saying I don't.
Oh, I know you don't. You're not saying that yet. You made your position very clear a bunch of different times. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of going off what you were saying, how, you know, like to believe the woman, because I had my doubts because I knew the people that, you know, accused Al Franken were both right wing, both of the women. The other woman that from Texas or whatever, oh, it said in the article, she said, I voted for Trump, you know, so and that has nothing to do with it. I still believe Al Franken did it. And, you know,
in the initial disclosure, there's nothing to believe or not believe. The photo's there, and the bump and grind video and the kiss are on video from the USO tour. So,
right.
But the distinction and the controversy arises when Franken says, I don't remember the rehearsal the same way she does. And the photo was a stupid mistake, and I shouldn't have participated in it. Actually, he said, I shouldn't have taken it, and yet he didn't take the photo.
But then there's a 2009 picture of him and Leanne at a USO event. She's all smiles, and he's smiling, and it's like no big deal. She said she couldn't stand to be around him.
Right. Yeah, and these are all means of testing credibility.
Yeah, it is. But like Steve said last week, and this is very important, he nailed it right on the head, Steve from New York, that what we need to set ourselves apart from these disgusting right wingers is the reaction. Our reaction and the people on the so-called left's reaction has been pretty universal and actually pretty good considering, because no matter what, there's going – see, I saw somebody was trying to get party of rape trending the other night, and it failed miserably, but because a lot of people were just like, okay, this is bullshit. But about the Democratic Party, you know, from fascists. But, you know, like really what the difference here is you know, there's going to be sexual harassment whenever you have a man – who has some sort of position of power and who has female subordinates usually or women around him, period. A lot of times, yes, there's going to be sexual harassment. I don't care how progressive or far right the institution is. I don't care if it's in, you know, a super left-wing organization or institution or whatever. There's always going to be sexual harassment. There always is, you know, like we have these meetings here, me and the local progressives, you know, for our committee. And there's a young woman, a good looking young woman who just got elected as the youngest person to be elected to her office in her borough. You know, she's a Democrat. But there's also one day she was, there's a guy, older guy that comes in who claims to be to the left of Bernie. But, you know, he sat behind her one day and afterwards she got up when we were done with the meeting. And I mean, she got out of there so freaking quick, didn't say bye to nobody. And I asked her about the next monthly meeting we had. And I said, what was that all about? You kind of just left abruptly. She said, because the guy in back of her was creeping her out, you know, and I believe it. So there's my point with that is there's always going to be creepy sexual, you know, skeevy assholes everywhere. And I think we're doing a pretty good job of people on our side saying, okay, this guy did it. You know, there's no real like, oh, we don't believe it. When it comes to the women that accused like Trump and all them, they denied it, you know, and Roy Moore, they're denying it. They're not saying, you know, with Al Franken, he didn't outright deny it. And the people in Al Franken's party aren't going around saying, oh, these women are full of it. They did this and they did that and stuff. And, you know, talking about, you know, maybe they could be promiscuous or something. There's nothing like that. So the difference is pretty stark between the reaction on our side and their side. And I do think that matters, you know. So I thought that Steve was hit the nail right on the head last week when he said it's going to be how the reaction is on our side compared to theirs, because they do it every single time when there's an accusation, they deny it and then they smear the woman that is accusing them. Look at the women. I mean, that was disgusting and vicious, the way that the women that accused Trump, how the way he talked about them last year, and then the woman who he like fat shamed on camera, you know, and how he fat shamed Rosie O'Donnell during a debate and things. I mean, that right there makes me realize that the think that the country just went off the fucking deep end because of electing somebody like him. That's disgusting, you know. Not to go on a tangent here.
You're fine. It is disgusting, and it is a wonder to me that every time one of these stories come up, it's not followed by a 3-minute and 30-second package on all the times that Trump has been accused of nasty ass sexual misconduct.
And that's what pisses me off about the media. That's why on Friday I was so pissed off about the media, you know, because of that reason. And then on Monday or Tuesday, I saw that they had like 6 Trump supporters on a panel again, pushing pro-Trump propaganda. Again, because they're never – I mean, do they realize the CNN and Allison Camerota and all those, do they realize that there's more Americans other than Trump supporters that we exist too? You know, they never ever once interviewed a Bernie supporter or a Hillary supporter, never went to any of these protest rallies, you know, protesting against fascism and asked anybody on the streets there like, hey, what are you here protesting? Nothing like that. They don't care about us. We're nothing to them. The Trump pansies are all that matter to them. And do they really expect one of them to come on out of the dozen times they had him on there since he got elected and actually say something negative about him? So what does that tell you? Well, that tells me that they're either stupid or they're trying to push pro-Trump propaganda, because that's all it serves to do. One guy just last week said, you know, if Jesus Christ told me one thing, I'd go and check with Trump to make sure it was true.
Yeah,
he
I
actually
thought that
said
one.
That.
Yeah, I know.
And these people don't press him on it. They, you know, he said he's out for the little guy. Why didn't the anchor say, well, why is being out for the little guy, his administration voting to take away our people's right to sue the banks in a class action suit?
Well,
that's,
you know, there's
of course if they get ripped off.
He's out for the little guy has multiple meanings. That could also mean he has it in for the little guy, and that is the damn truth. Okay.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. Yeah. Yeah, that's where I think the media is failing abysmally. I mean, it is awful. In my opinion, they committed pretty much all but treason. last year because they allowed a fascist takeover so that they could get profits, because you know goddamn well that somebody had to know that if Hillary Clinton would have won the election, that their ratings would have gone way down. It would have took a nosedive. That happened. It's pretty common knowledge that the ratings during the campaign seasons are go up a lot. But after the campaign seasons are down, these networks, their ratings take a huge hit. And they didn't want that. They knew that if Trump got elected, that the ratings would stay up. Like it was like the campaign was just going to keep going on and on, like it feels like it has. And that's one of the reasons, is because of the media. And I, in my opinion, I think that is absolutely shameful. I mean, I think that is a calamity. That is a huge scandal, the way that their role was. And I think that we need to be looking at that for more and harder. Nobody really talks about the media's role, and nobody ever hammers on the media for what they've done. And that's why sometimes when he goes after him, I kind of just say, well, you play with fire, you're going to get burnt.
Well,
my soapbox.
No, but your anger and your frustration are more than and there's no doubt that this was a boon, a financial boon to the media.
Big time.
It's been
big time.
The New York Times circulation is up. Its numbers are up. Its revenues are up. MSNBC is doing better than ever. CNN's doing better than ever. People are paying closer attention to the news. And, well, nothing succeeds like success, as they say.
Right.
But on the other hand, because there's always one of those, I want to go back to the Conyers thing for a minute, because I got notes from both Jack in Shreveport and Scott and Punky. Scott says, as I understand it, the $27,000 settlement figure represents severance pay to the woman, apparently resulting from a mutual agreement by all parties in order to avoid a more formal public proceeding. And so when Conyers comes out the next day and says this wasn't a sexual harassment settlement, then the issue is joined. But that was a monumental failure. You know, it's not the same thing as the Steele dossier. BuzzFeed published that with the dossier in their hands. They had the memo. They knew what was in it. And as compared to what happened with the Conyers story, there's a lot less detail, and frankly, I find it interesting that you have to wait 8 paragraphs before they say, "Oh, by the way, we're only publishing this because it was given to us by a notorious right-wing rat fucker who was instrumental, by the way, in the rat-fucking of Hillary Clinton in 2016. So it sort of goes to show that the sensationalism, outweighs the journalistic validity of the story. Does that make sense, John? Oh, John. Great. Lost the group, I think. Stand by, please.
I'm still here.
We're here.
Oh, okay. I kept asking questions and not getting a response. That made me think I'd lost the group. Hi, Jules. What's up?
Oh, I just popped in. I wanted to kind of clarify something. Someone had said that, the situation with Al Franken, that that he was seen with the name is slipping.
Lauren Tweeden.
Lauren, yeah, on the on the stage, and that she looked, I'm not defending her, or anything, but she was seen on the stage looking all up and bright with him and everything. you know, women who are in these situations, they do everything they can to cover up what they're feeling. I mean, it's like a woman who's in an abuse situation. They look bright and cheery out in public, but they go home and they aren't so cheery. It's easy to mask how you're feeling.
Right, of course, she wasn't going home to Al Franken.
Yes, I understand that.
And there's also another factor involved that I was going to mention when John was talking about. There's this thing that she does, and that other people on that tour do, called acting.
Yeah.
And so you show up on stage, you know, you can, if people are accomplished at their craft, they can be at each other's throats 15 seconds before their cue, and they go on stage smiling and happy.
Exactly.
Because that's the business.
Yep.
So I'm not particularly impressed by that bit of information. What I find more telling is the fact that he disputes the kiss rehearsal, and he certainly admitted the photo and said it was stupid and I never should have taken the photo, which tells me that he's taking the fall for someone else. He's taking the fall for whoever snapped the photo, because he does not have a prehensile tail with which to hold the goddamn camera while he's got his two other hands in plain sight, in a bad place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they haven't ever disclosed who took the photo either.
No, they haven't. So, you know,
which I find kind of odd.
Well, I don't. Franken's a fairly decent guy, and he's not going to drag somebody else into his hell.
Now, I'm not saying that he would, but the media is going to take it for all it's worth, you know?
Well, they might be digging, or it may have been taken by somebody whose name isn't on a list anywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's not, there's no guarantee that that who that person. But, you know, there's always I think what's more important in all of this is that we on the left not be a bunch of schmucks.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever it was, it's pretty obvious from Roger Stone, from the mere presence of Roger Stone and Mike Chernovich, who cares, their mere presence tells us that there is rat fuckery involved. Because they are rat fuckers. It's what they do. It's not like a little altar boy showed up leading Leanne Tweeden by the hand. So that immediately casts, at least for me, some doubt into the process. Compare it, for instance, with the story with the Roy Moore business jewels. There's no Mike Chernovich. There's no Roger Stone. You can argue that the Democrats don't even have anyone of that equivalency.
Mm-hmm.
But instead you've got good journalism. A reporter hears story. They trace the story down. They talk to the first woman. She says, "I'm not going public unless there's anybody else." And then lo and behold, there's eight other people.
Well, the reporter didn't even have to hear the story. Apparently, this was gossip amongst people. It's been gossip amongst people around the around Roy Moore for ages.
Well, it was on a general basis. Yeah, Roy Moore can't go to the mall. A cop was detailed to make sure that Roy Moore wasn't caught looking up cheerleader skirts and trying to see their little panties under their skirts and stuff like that. Or going,
I mean, he was a fucking pedophile.
Hey, little darling, you on a date? I'm the DA. He was the assistant.
I mean,
DA
he's a bloody pedophile. I mean, I don't know why they keep saying he's dating. He dated these little girls, you know. 14-year-old is that a 14-year-old is not a young lady, is not going on a date. That's pedophilia. I'm sorry.
Well, let me ask you. Now, this is, and I'm not being argumentative, but I was it pedophilia 100 years ago? Was it pedophilia 150 years ago? 200 years ago?
In my opinion, yes.
When 14-year-old brides and 16-year-old husbands, or even 14-year-old brides and 30-year-old husbands were not at all uncommon.
Yes. They are still children. At that age, they are still children.
It has been said, Jules, that the age of the child was introduced in the Victorian era. And are you familiar with I'm talking about in that regard?
No, I'm speaking surely from a physical, mental, emotional, and brain. You know, the growth of the brain. I'm speaking surely from a medical standpoint. They are still children. Especially emotionally and mentally, they you know, that's no, they.
Are you really certain that you can, step into the shoes of someone 150 years ago and say that? On the front.
No, I can't.
On the frontier.
No, I can't. I mean, honestly, I can't. But in today's society.
Right. So what we're doing here, just to be clear, we are applying modern mores. And I'm doing this for a reason. That when we judge past practice, for instance, talking about the founders of this country being slave owners, they knew it was morally repugnant because there was a debate about it at that time. So we can a little more easily say that they knew damned well and good that what they were participating in was morally at least questionable, because the questions were being asked. I don't know if you consider the nature of human evolution and human biology, and I am not defending this in any way. I don't know if you can say the same, but the point I'm making here is that this did not happen 150 years ago. It happened 38 years ago. Okay?
Exactly. And 38 years ago, it was a hell of a lot harder to report sexual abuse or to report things like this. Young ladies were expected to bow down to men like this.
And 38 years ago in Alabama, young black men were still being found in trees.
Exactly.
Hanging by their necks. And you know, so it's and so what I'm getting at is it comes as no surprise to me to find out that was still going on because of where the place is and what the place is.
Well, I don't care. I do not think that them calling him, saying that he had dates with these young ladies, especially the 14-year-olds, that's not a date. He was stalking children.
He was perving. He couldn't make any headway within his own peer group because he was living where he grew up, and his own peer group hated him. They knew how awful he was. They knew what a weirdo he was. Remember, this is a guy who went through 3 years of law school at the University of Alabama being called fruit salad because he was so mixed up, because everything he said was wrong. Because he had a fundamental lack of understanding of even so much as the most basic founding tenets of the law that rules our country. And so consequently, his only hope was to get to some young woman before she could find out what a skeeve he was. I mean, there's a reason. People do things for reasons. He wasn't just driven by some compulsion. I mean, he even, in describing his relationship with his wife, Kayla, guess what? She first came to his attention when she was a teenager in a dance recital that he went out of his way to attend. And he married her 8, 9 years later.
Yeah, I mean, that's just... There's nothing wrong with older men and younger women getting together. I mean, I'm not saying that, but you have to draw a line with if is this young lady mature enough to understand what she's getting into? And when, you know, it's you know, a 16-, 14-, 15-, 16-year-old girl getting involved with a 30-year-old man, that is, there's some lines there. They are not fully mature enough to understand what is happening.
Precisely. And that is codified in law. Because the age of consent in the state of Alabama, as it is in the state of West Virginia, is 16. Now, I may be mistaken. I think it's possible that there are states where the age of consent, and it may come as a shock to you, Jules, is 14. Mm-hmm. Is 14. You might want to check your statutes there in Talibandiana.
Yes, there are states that do have a statutory age of 14. And in many states, if you petition the state, you can allow marriage at 14, even if the statutory is 16.
Right. Yeah. You have to petition. A child may be emancipated from his or her parents prior to the age of 16 with the leave of the court.
Mm-hmm.
But there are states, I believe there still are states, where the age of consent is 14.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there are. I saw a map of it. I can't remember what it was, but it has to be with the consent of the parents. If it's under 18, it has to be with the consent of the parents, I believe.
Well, you're talking about marriage. You're not talking about sex, okay? Age of consent is 16, that's the age at which a person is deemed male or female to be capable of consenting to participating in sex. That's, you know, statutory rape in this state, for instance, is defined as someone more than 4 years older than the other person, and the other person being under 16 having sex. At that point, there's no question of consent. It's just statutory rape. Now, what happened with Roy Moore when Leanne Korfman was 14 years old was that he put her, he got her down to bra and panties. Then he went in the other room and he groped her over her underwear. Then he went in another room, took his clothes off, and came back in and laid down next to her and took her hand and physically placed it on his genitals over top of his underwear. At that point in time, those acts are defined and were defined by the state of Alabama at the time as sexual abuse. And they were misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. They were misdemeanors, and they had a statute of limitations. That's why nobody can pursue him for it. The statute of limitations, if this happened 38 years ago, then the statute of limitations ran like 36 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the reason I asked the earlier questions that I did is that many of our laws relating to consent are rooted in those 19th and 18th century ideals.
Of course they are.
Or not ideals, but ideas. When a growing nation that was pushing across the continent, well, you know, you get the boy up to 16 and there's a neighbor girl over there and she's 14. Well, let's get them hitched and we'll give them a parcel of ground and they can set up housekeeping.
And we can have us some grandkids.
Well, it becomes very, very important under those circumstances because you need to add labor to work the land to produce the food necessary to support the family.
I got a question for you. First thing that is anyone, you know, one of the first things anyone asks you when you haven't seen someone since high school, and you know their kids are grown and your kids are grown. What's one of the first things that they ask you? Oh, do your kids are grown? Do they have children? Do you have any grandkids? You know, it's like, no, my daughter's 27 and my son's 21. No, I don't have any grandkids. You know, Yeah, what happened?
That's a natural question. I mean, it's vanilla. It's fairly benign. That's just the kind of thing that people who, despite having known each other 30 years before, are essentially strangers, would say to each other. I ran into somebody while I was over a couple of counties away, and I saw him, and I said, "Well, I'm surprised to see you out here. I figured you'd be in the woods." And he said, "Nope, gave up deer hunting. Haven't deer hunted in 3 years. All I do now is I fly fish." And, you know, it was just a question, because it was based on previous familiarity. But what I was saying is that when in a country that is and considering 17th and 18th century female lifespans, which were lower than those of men.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Childbirth.
Childbirth. That's why they were dying, is because they were giving birth because their bodies were not ready to give birth.
They were dying. They were dying. I mean, we're talking about an average lifespan at 38, 40. Okay, I'm sure there were some that died at 14 and 15. But what we're talking about there is biological imperatives. And so consequently, a young nation, and you say, we need to change the law. Well, no, Jules, we need to change 50 laws. Because this isn't some national statute. The age of consent changes based upon where you are, and it tends to be lower in Appalachian and southern states. So that's 50 laws need changing. And you know what? Considering that we have a majority of the states in this union where the legislature is a Republican majority, don't hold your breath. Because, see, a bunch of these people still belong to religions that are okay with that. At least nominally so.
Well, hell, I read an article today where there was a school in, I forget where it was, I can pull up the article though, that is refusing to let students, if students kneel or sit for the pledge or the national anthem, they're suspending them.
I had that story, I guess, what, Wednesday evening. The guy who was 10 years ago, a teacher in upstate New York, said he flunked two kids because they wouldn't stand for the pledge.
Well, this is a Catholic school. And if they have three offenses, they are kicked out of school. So.
Well, so you wouldn't have to worry about Jehovah's Witnesses in those schools.
Mm-mm.
They don't say the pledge. They don't stand for the pledge. They don't participate in the pledge at all, because it's a violation.
Go to Catholic school.
Right. It's a violation of their deeply held religious principles.
Mm-hmm. Let me grab it real quick and I'll tell you for sure. Oops, see, where was it? Lansing, Michigan is where it was. St. Mary Cashmere.
Well, that sounds real fancy. St. Mary Cashmere. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. A Catholic school in Lansing, Michigan has announced that they will punish any students who engage in any kind of protest, silence, or otherwise during the national anthem at school events, or by standing and not reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
Well, it's a private school. They've more or less got a right to do that.
Yep, I do.
And since people are paying their good money to send their kids to the school, it's wrong and it's evil. But hey, look what else goes on in the church. So, any surprise?
Mm-hmm. Nope. Excuse me, I didn't get it at all. At Immaculate Heart of Mary Saint Cashmere School, I got it wrong. Okay.
Well, that's an even bigger mouthful.
Yeah. I had to get it all in.
I mean, I was thinking about this last week when I did the interview with Jeff Biggers, this magnificent book, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. That's why I'm mentioning it again. Brand new book out from St. Martin's Press, The Trials of a Scold, The Incredible True Story of Writer Anne Royal.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lost and forgotten history that Jeff has dug into and sort of rejuvenated. Now, she was leading a life of hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And she and her mother more or less hired themselves out when they became destitute, and they found themselves down in the frontier of Virginia, which is now West Virginia, and they got into the employ of a man named, a Revolutionary War veteran and wealthy man named Captain Royal.
Mm-hmm.
She was a teenager, and he was in his 30s. And he had probably the best library west of the Alleghenies. And he told Anne that she could have free run of the library.
Mm-hmm.
And she taught herself everything she could. She read everything she could get her hands on and taught herself the art of writing. And taught herself some Greek and some Latin. And eventually, Captain Royal and Anne, when she was still a teenager, were married. And she went on, and it scandalized Royal's family, because they considered Anne to be merely a concubine. And she stood right by her husband's side to the bitter end, and then her family sued and took away her inheritance from her husband. Because they said it was nothing but a she had done nothing but to entrap an older, lonely man.
I've heard that story, yeah.
And the court sided with the family, and she was left destitute and penniless.
Mm-hmm. But, I've heard about that, yeah.
But she had a good mind, and
she had educated herself well.
And she had an absolute dogged determination not to be beaten.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the talk of the young country.
Mm-hmm.
in the early part of the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what's interesting. I guess there are people who would agree with Captain Royal's relatives.
For sure.
That it was just a dirty relationship, and there was no honest love. There was no, you know, real relationship to it. That
mm-hmm.
that she was using her teenage feminine wiles to get at his fortune.
Mm-hmm.
When every last shred of evidence suggests otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So, as usual, and of course it's the 19th century, blame the woman. And oddly enough, 200 years later or more, and son of a bitch, if the Roy Moore camp isn't doing the same damned thing.
Mm-hmm.
Blame the woman.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I was raised down there, Jules. And I can tell you that there are places in Alabama where, in many ways, time has stood still. The very politics of the state is a case of time standing still.
I understand that. I do. I know it's any part of the country you go to, it's going to be different as far as the way people react and they respond to different things. I mean, it's just that's the way you're going to have to do. You have to learn to adjust and adapt to that. But our country is also going to have to learn to start adapting and adjusting to things in a different manner. We're all going to have to, you know, kind of come into belonging to ourselves as a nation if we're going to have, be able to work together. And this is one of those things. Sexual harassment, sexual abuse, child abuse, you know, these types of things are going to have to stop. All of this hatred, all of these killings, they're going to have to stop.
They're not going to. You can try to cut down on the incidence of child abuse and child sexual abuse and rape, but you're not going to eliminate it.
No, we're not going to eliminate it, but we need to get our numbers down. I mean, the abuse rate in America is higher, one of the highest in the world. I mean, we have our abuse rates are absolutely astronomical. And, you know, the ones that go unreported are even higher. I'll guarantee you, because we don't have the systems in place for people who suffer from abuse. I mean, even today, child sexual abuse and child physical abuse goes unreported way too many times. Way too many times. I guarantee it.
Well, you mentioned
because
it, so I looked it up. I looked it up.
Say anything.
And this goes back to a 2009 meta study called in the Clinical Psychology Review called "Prevalence of Child Sexual Abuse in Community and Student Samples: A Meta Analysis." It was a review of 65 published research articles across 22 countries. That sought to understand the prevalence and breadth of child sexual abuse globally. An estimated 7.9% of men and 19.7% of women globally experienced sexual abuse prior to the age of 18. U.S. rates were 7.5% for males and 25.3% for females. The highest prevalence rate of child sexual abuse geographically was found to be in Africa, 34.4%. Europe showed the lowest prevalence rate at 9.2%. North America and Asia had prevalence rates between 10.1 and 23.9. South Africa has the highest prevalence rate for both men and women at 60.9 and 43.7%. Jordan presents the second highest prevalence rate for men, 27%, followed by Tanzania, 25%. Rates between 10% and 20% are reported for males in Israel and Spain at 13.4%, Israel at 15.7%, Australia 13%, and Costa Rica 12.8%, while the remaining countries all have prevalence rates below 10%. For women, seven countries reported prevalence rates above 20%. Australia, Costa Rica, Tanzania, Israel, Sweden, the United States, and Switzerland.
I was, I think this one that I looked at was industrialized nations. Out of the industrialized nations, America has like one of the highest. Is a quarter of our women, before they even get out of puberty, are being abused.
As opposed to Australia, where it's 37.8%, and Israel at 30.7%, and Sweden at 28.8%.
Yeah. Well, it's a problem. It's a problem worldwide, is what I'm saying.
Well, yes, it is. And the fact that you can get these numbers also indicates the degree to which the country is willing to even pay attention to the problem.
But see, I want to point out another thing, is that their systems that they have in place are easier for them to find out. It's easier for people to report these issues. So the numbers are really skewed. In America, it's not easy to get, it's not easy for kids to report these issues. They live with them forever and ever and ever and ever until they crack. It's a lot easier to get help in those countries.
Well, I'd say it probably is easier to get help in a place like Australia, Sweden, or Israel. It's probably undecided. It's probably undebatably easier to get help. But it's also damn difficult, as you note, to report. Somebody, unless a little kid just wanders to the police station and happens upon an officer who actually listens and believes and acts, somewhere along the way, that child is going to need some adult to believe them. And I don't have any scientific evidence behind this, but I would suggest that that becomes much more difficult if the abuse is taking place inside the household.
Our teachers, you know, I think that they probably, I don't know, I think the numbers are skewed, and I haven't exactly looked into it, but I have a very strong feeling that because they have better social safety nets, it's easier to get assistance, and if, you know, there is a suspicion of abuse, it's probably reported a lot sooner, and it's actually reported instead of just being swept to the side, because the teachers don't, you know, who sees the kids most? The teachers. If they see something odd, if they suspect something, you know, are they going to say anything? Yeah, maybe not.
It depends on the severity of the... It depends on the behavior that they witness or what is said to them.
And many kids say a lot of things, you know, that are overheard by teachers, and a lot of teachers ignore it.
Well, indeed. Well, Jules, I appreciate the conversation. It's time for us to get out of here. I still don't know if I'm going to be filling in for Malloy, because I'm still not connected to I'm still not connected to Progressive Voices. I guess all I can do is wait and see. But at any rate, thanks for jumping in, everybody, on this day after Thanksgiving, Friday on the front porch. I've enjoyed it. Sparky, as usual, thank you for your participation, and thank you for leading the group.
You're welcome.
And any big game watching plans for the weekend? Are you going to watch the Iron Bowl?
No, I just checked ESPN, though. What do you think about Pittsburgh beating Miami?
I think that's beautiful. the shame of it all is I expect Clemson to beat Miami too. So that'll be goodbye to Miami out of the top four playoff picture.
I'll be watching the saga of my 49ers.
Well, it's all about the Iron Bowl for me on Saturday, because I don't have, you know, I'm a good Mountaineer fan. I know when they've got a chance and when they don't. I don't expect my Mountaineers to go into Norman and somehow or another manage to upset Oklahoma, although that would be deliriously wonderful if they could. So, you know, this is going to be one of the best Iron Bowls in recent memory.
Rick says he's ready now, but you're leaving. You want to bring him on for five minutes?
Yeah, I guess. Sure. Yeah, let's bring Rick in. We can bring him in to say goodnight.
Got to answer first. But I'll be watching some basketball, too, I think.
Hey.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
How
Rick.
You doing?
Heading out the door.
Yeah, well, good for you. I just worked off my Thanksgiving dinner. I'm actually a pound lighter than I was yesterday before Thanksgiving dinner.
Congratulations.
Well, that's some serious sweat.
Yeah, we're talking about over 1,000 calories of expenditure there, so... Yeah. So now I can pig out again. I'm going to have leftover dinner with my friend Star, and then we're going to go see The Killer, a.k.a. Jerry Lee Lewis.
Ooh. Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's him being a killer and you not being the killer.
No, of course not.
Jules, he's promised to use his powers only for good from henceforward.
Okay.
I think my batting average is down to like either 333 or 250 because since the Tom Petty show, I've seen like Billy Idol and Morris. I don't know if they count. They're maybe too young. They're like
See, it was only after the Tom Petty show that you that we identified your powers. So now you're conscious of them, and consequently you behave accordingly.
Well, there you go. So I'm sure I'll have a concert review for everybody next time around. And it sounds like you all had a good Thanksgiving. Did you enjoy your time with family, Bob?
Oh, it was lovely. It was a lovely evening. Well, it was a lovely day. It was a whole day.
Good. Excellent. Yeah, it was like I was driving down to Orange County from here. It was like 85 degrees when I left. Like, I guess it was 12 noon or so. Maybe it was 1 o'clock. And then it got progressively warmer. It got to like 98 degrees in downtown LA on November 23rd, you know, give me a break. And then by the time I got down to Orange County, it had cooled off to like 87, but it was still unseasonably warm. And, you know, today is like, cooler, but I guess the way I'm telling it to people is, look, this is, I guess, our endless summer. It's true. The Beach Boys were right.
Here inside the studio, it's a toasty 66 degrees. So,
okay.
It got a little brisk yesterday and the day before, and I don't know. Thanks to the hoax perpetrated by China.
There you go.
God knows it may be 85 by next week.
Yeah, it's the most.
No. Highest temperature we'll see for the next week or so is 60. Lowest low is 31.
Okay.
So I'm definitely into propane season, and that sucks.
Okay, well, I know it was like in the low 70s in Lincoln, Nebraska for the Iowa-Hawkeye-Nebraska game today. So, you know, I guess they're getting our weather, but, you know, maybe you're like in that, you know, kind of sweet spot where you're going to actually have a winter. If you want to call it that.
Whether or not that is sweet is up for debate.
Yeah, right. I'd say more like sour spot, right?
Yeah, just kind of an ordinary spot. But anyway, I got to get out of here. Good to talk to you, Rick.
Hey, likewise. My friend has just arrived, so it's perfect timing. So everybody enjoy your post-Thanksgiving. And
you too, Rick.
And I think tomorrow is Stop Shopping Day, or was today Stop Shopping Day? I forget.
I think that was today, and I didn't shop.
That
so.
Was today. I didn't shop either, so I succeeded. Bought some posts.
My wife shopped on the computer.
Okay.
You could not get me out in that madness for any sum of money, I don't think.
No kidding.
Anyway,
all right, well,
I didn't go anywhere today,
Thanks for bringing me on here late.
Well, we enjoyed it, and we'll talk next week. In the meantime, thanks to everybody who makes it all go. Thanks to all of you who contribute to keep the program going. We will have a $488 fundraising goal come Monday, minus whatever happens with the overnight crew tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday night, but we'll proceed from 488 downward, and hopefully we will manage to nudge the Norsky, lick the Lithuanian, and cash the check, and clear November to the good. So thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thanks for your emails and your Facebook posts, and even the ones that you post, even when you don't mean to, and you post a picture of Donald Trump, and for some goddamn reason I wind up tagged in it. You know, thanks, I guess. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and all-around great guy, pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Have a great weekend.